Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Your first mission is to keep yourself happy.
It's living for self that is so exhausting and frustrating because you were made to live for Him. So when you begin to please Him, you begin to thrive. It's not a burden. It's not a duty. It's a joy. I come alive. This is what I was made for.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
This is not the news we wanted. This is Wretched Radio. What do you do when you receive bad news? Health diagnosis? A pink slip? A relationship that goes kafritz? Do you have a propensity, like I think we all do, to wonder why? This is not the way I would do it. I think that that's a pretty natural response. It could be sinful, perhaps not sinful. But it is the question that we tend to ask when things don't go our way. What is the Christian to do when they receive news that they don't prefer? And the answer can be found in Phil Johnson. You say, wait a second, that doesn't even quite make sense. Phil Johnson, 2 years ago, give or take, was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. That is a deadly cancer. The great news, what at the time, was that they had something that could stave it off for a decade. And Phil underwent, massive treatments to deal with it. And great news. He came back, you're good to go. But we're going to keep testing you to make sure that the cancer doesn't come back. Well, the cancer has come back. Received a text from Phil, because I knew yesterday he was getting his test results. I would like to read his text to you, with his permission, because Phil never keeps these types of things private, which is a study unto itself. Nevertheless, here's what he wrote. The cancer is definitely back, and it looks aggressive. They'll change the way they're treating it. They want to use CAR T cell therapy, an advanced form of immunotherapy that reprograms one's own immune cells to find and destroy cancer cells. It's a newer treatment that has supposedly been pretty effective. Actually, I might disagree with Phil. It's been really effective. It is, in fact, it has been so promising that immunotherapy could replace so much of the chemotherapy that is so often prescribed. It doesn't mean that you tiptoe through the immunotherapy tulips, but it ain't nothing like getting chemotherapy and radiation. Now, sometimes with immunotherapy, you still need to get some of those things, but overall, it's doing the heavy lifting and it has far less side effects than traditional chemotherapy and radiation treatment. I think that that should give us some hope for Phil. He continues to write, the change starts immediately. Under the old regimen, I was given infusions via a massive syringe and needle in the abdomen at least once a month. I was due that today, but they canceled it. So now I go back to the Keck Cancer Center at USC starting a week from today to start the new treatment. The same hematologist who did my stem cell transplant last year will do this. There are no new symptoms that I can feel, only numbers on my blood test. But the numbers are definitive, especially as they measure my light chains. By the way, keep in mind, you're getting a glimpse into the mind of Phil Johnson right now, because what I'm reading to you is a text. Who texts like this? Who takes the time? And there's no typos. All the grammar is correct. Just amazing. You're going to get a lesson now in light chains. Light chains are proteins in the blood that get out of control with multiple myeloma. They're part of your natural immune system, but with MM, they multiply ferociously and start attacking the body's own organs and bones. A normal number for light chains is 19 or less. Mine was around 19 to 25 all year until the number started growing in mid-June. By July 29th, it had grown to 216. And was increasing quickly, so the oncologist wanted to attack it immediately. Aren't you grateful for science, for godly science that can actually help human beings, they discovered that Phil's numbers weren't good, so they can deal with it. But they discovered that second. The Lord knew those numbers. The Lord knows the exact number right now for Phil. He knew the numbers before the test took place. He knew the numbers after the test took place. Why? Because he's sovereignly in control of Phil Johnson's light cell numbers, light chain numbers. He's in control of all of this, and Phil knows this full well. When I received this text, I have to confess to you, I just, this isn't what I wanted. This isn't what I wanted. I'm going to be sharing a sermon that Phil just delivered at Grace Community Church. I believe it was a Sunday night affair. Nathan Buznitz, the new pastor of Grace Community Church, asked Phil if he would do a presentation on Christian nationalism. Don't go look it up because we're going to share it here. And I even want to share it on YouTube because it is Phil Johnson at his finest, taking a big, complex issue and making it manageable, understandable, and oh so biblical. And it is delivered with force. It is delivered pastorally. It is beautifully written, magnificently presented. And I'd like 10 more years of that, as the doctors suggested that he could have originally. I want that. That's what I want. But maybe the Lord doesn't. Now, we don't know what this new immunotherapy is going to... Let me put it this way. I wanted him to be, like, cancer-free. And a decade goes by, and we get this text. That's what I wanted. I didn't want to deal with it now. Now, we want to be hopeful and prayerful that the Lord is going to bring those numbers down via science. We want to pray for that. But this isn't what I wanted at the moment. I didn't want Phil to have to go through more stuff. I didn't want him to be sidelined. He's crushing it when he preaches. He might be better than ever. And he's always been really good at preaching. It's not what I wanted. I suspect it's not what Phil wanted. I suspect it's not what you wanted. But the Lord did. Now, we'll say this. We've got to be careful with our language in moments like this. When we say that the Lord, what, this, permitted this, well, to a degree, yes, but nothing happens outside of his providential will. Even if you want to use the language of permission, it still means that it falls underneath God's providential will. So you can say that this is what God wanted, but you have to be immediately careful because it's not that he delights in this. Like, oh, I'm going to do this to Phil Johnson. He knows what is absolutely best for Phil Johnson. And this is apparently it. Now, one of us is going to have to change our tune, God or me. And I think that that's pretty obvious who's got to change their mind on this subject, who's got to be the one to say, you know what's best. You're the one who has this. You are a good father. You are a loving God. You are kind to your children, even when you send hard things. Please note, it is not a sin for the Lord to give Phil Johnson cancer. It is not a sin if the Lord decides to take Phil Johnson's life. It's not a sin for him to do that. Why? He owns Phil Johnson in every way. He owns him because he made him, but he owns him because Jesus bought him. And if he chooses this path for Phil, then I need to change my tune. And I don't need to just go, all right, fine. I'm going to put up with it. Mutter, mutter, grumble, grumble. No. I have to go further than that. I have to recognize this really is what is best for Phil. Now, I might not be able to sort it on this side of eternity, but if the Lord is ordaining this for Phil, then it must be best. It must be, because God doesn't do less than best for his children. Remember, God never does anything to his children. He only does things for his children. And if this is what he's doing for Phil, well, I might not be the way that I would choose to do it. Certainly God knows better than I do. I mean, could there ever be a greater understatement than that? Let's not talk about Phil for a moment. Let's talk about ourselves. Do we possess that attitude when hard things hit us? Are we ready now to say, your will be done, not my will, your will be done, and I will not just accept it and gnash my teeth, but I'll accept it as a good gift from you because you are my loving Father who knows what is best for me. I know that's how Phil Johnson feels. I know it is. If the Lord should choose to take Phil sooner than later, he's ready. He knows that. Why? Because the Lord that he's been preaching about for 40, 50 years is the Lord that he knows and loves and that he knows loves him. And that he even now, Phil Johnson, even at this moment, is singing, "It is well with my soul." May that be said of all of us when the news we don't prefer hits. This is Wretched Radio.
Have you ever wanted to take a tour of Europe, but you couldn't swing the airfare? Good news! Todd Friel's already gone for you. Our resource on the Shoulders of Giants takes you across six countries to meet your Christian ancestors, the Reformers, the men who were strangled, quartered, and burned alive so you could hold a Bible in your own language and understand the gospel of grace. You'll see the stake where Jan Hus was burned to death, the prison where William Tyndale translated scripture, the very courtroom where John Wycliffe was called monstrously wicked. You'll visit Martin Luther's home, the field where George Whitefield preached to 30,000 people without a microphone, and the outdoor pulpit of the thundering Scot himself, John Knox. These people were too good for this world, and their lives will challenge you to be bolder than ever before. On the Shoulders of Giants, it is streaming for free right now on Fortis Plus. Download the app where you download apps on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or simply visit fortisplus.org.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke? Or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number six for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Some struggles stay hidden for years. For many Christian women, pornography is one of them, and the shame surrounding it keeps them silent.
If you're listening and this is your struggle, I want you to know that shame and secrecy are not God's will for you.
Out of the Shadows is a three-part series from Fortis Institute hosted by our very own Libby Glosson, and it was made for the woman who believes she's the only one.
If you've written yourself off as someone outside of God's mercy, hear me. You are not too far gone. Sin is real, yes. But so is forgiveness.
Out of the Shadows, streaming right now for free on Fortis Plus with a free study guide to go along with it. You don't have to keep this struggle in the shadows because there is hope and there is forgiveness and there is freedom in Christ. Available right now at fortisplus.org.
Know your reformers. Ulrich Zwingli was a Swiss reformer who pioneered expository preaching, introduced the regulative principle, and brought a republican government to Switzerland. He fought against the Roman Catholic Church for theological and political independence and died in battle. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Yikes! time flies. This is Wretched Radio. I thought we would enjoy some moments with Phil Johnson, so I went to the YouTube machine. I typed in Wretched Phil Johnson. Loads of stuff popped up, including this from 8 years ago.
The state of evangelical Christianity today. Go.
And I've said this often, I'll say it one more time. The state of evangelical Christianity today, I think, is worse, literally worse, than medieval Roman Catholicism.
What?
That's brutal.
If the church needed a reformation in Luther's time, we need one more desperately now. I mean, he was dealing with Tetzel, one guy who went through Germany raising money on false pretenses, really, for the enrichment of a religious leader, the Pope. We've got a lineup of, 30 people like that on any given television network who sell, holy water or prayer cloths or just beg for your money, or they sell survival food or whatever. It's the same kind of thing. They're ripping people off, and they're doing it consciously and knowingly for their own self-aggrandizement. And these are people who would self-identify as Protestants, and they are worse than Tetzel was.
Okay.
There's so many of them, aren't there? And it's not just the prosperity preachers. Consider all of these theological hacks. I'll flip through the religious channels section on our cable TV. Ooh, there's a lot of them out there. And please note, there's some really fine stuff out there. We're thrilled. Some of these networks are so godly and they're so good, and we're so grateful for them. I think of Dove TV. I think of the NRB network. There's several dozen that are like rock solid good, doing good work. And yet, wow, there are some stinkeroos out there. And you watch these people and it's like, I don't even know what religion you're talking about. And they have people sitting there watching them, listening, giving them money, no doubt. And whether it is about money or they're just so bad at teaching Christianity and courtesy of media, not just social media, but TV and radio. Tetzel, right? Luther had to deal with Tetzel. You could take aim at one guy. How do you take aim at all of these people? There's so many of them. Here's an interesting question. Let's noodle something. Jimmy, feel free to chime in on this, because I'm sure you're going to come up with the immediate solution.
Okay.
Yeah. What would a modern day Protestant Reformation look like? What would it look like?
Hmm.
What would have to happen? Because Luther's happened. We look back at it, and it happened in a particular culture at a particular time in a very particular setting. And courtesy of the printing press, that's how it happened. Well, we got the printing press and more. And you've got 1,000 voices. So Tetzel could write things. The Pope certainly wrote things. He wrote bulls against Martin Luther. What would it look like today for a reformation to take place? I think what you would need is a leader, is what you would need. And we've had several leaders in that regard, haven't we? We've had John MacArthur, we've had R.C. Sproul, we've had Vody Bachum, we've got Phil Johnson. We've got men that are striving for the purity of the word. But what would it look like for a full-blown reformation? Could it even happen in this current culture? Huh. I think we're going to talk about that at dinner tonight.
Forget that stream for a moment. Let's talk mainstream evangelical Christianity.
I'm not sure what's mainstream anymore. Would the mainstream be reflected in Christianity Today magazine? I think that's what most people think, that this is mainstream evangelicalism, Christianity Today. They advertise themselves for years as the house organ of evangelicalism. And yet you could read the pages of Christianity Today for 2 years, and I don't think you'd ever find any clear-cut doctrinal perspective that is definitively evangelical. It's not an evangelical magazine anymore.
The definitive would be a critique.
Right. If they said anything about evangelicalism, it would be critical. And that is, in my view, what mainstream, if you look at the big organizations, they're all just big agglomerations of all kinds of different perspectives. There really isn't any clear-cut evangelical spokesperson anymore. In my youth, it would have been Billy Graham. You know, he was the...
But see, that's why, you know, I've heard you say this before, that we need a modern day reformation. Now, obviously, God would have to orchestrate that. It seems to me, though, with all of the voices that have so many platforms these days, uneducated, untrained, they just get popular because they did something, they made it into the news, they were on a TV show, whatever it is. How in the world could something like that even happen these days? Yeah,
I was ahead of myself. I'm in alignment with the way that guy is thinking. I'm so glad to hear that.
In fact, it's usually pastors, church leaders are judged by the size of audience they can accumulate. So you've got Joel Osteen, that's who the world thinks of as the chief representative, or Andy Stanley or somebody like that. And for the most part, none of these are men who have any kind of devotion to the Word of God, real true devotion to the Word of God. They're doing whatever they can to garner a big audience, and that's their goal. That is not susceptible to reformation. That needs to die, and it will, because church history is like a series of cycles. You know, you can see what's going to happen by knowing what happened before. And the big popular movements of religion always die pretty quickly within a generation or two.
Mm-hmm. However, Phil and I had a little spat on the text machine earlier this week because of his video on Christian nationalism. Three years ago, perhaps, I sent Phil a text, or we were chatting, and I said, "Phil, I think we got a big problem with Christian nationalism." Now, this is when it was just really first cropping up, and it was becoming kind of a thing. And remember, Christian nationalism. Let's talk Christian, like a theonomic sort of Christian nationalism, a dominionist Christian nationalism. And I said, I think that this is something that we need to be really dealing with, like hard, because I think it's going to become a problem. And Phil said, "Nah, it's going to die. It's just gonna fade out." Well, when I saw his video where he was tasked to preach on Christian nationalism, it gave me a little bit of pleasure to send a text to him and say, "Looks like you were wrong, Phil. Ha ha ha! Looks like Friel was right. For the first time in our relationship of 20-some years, how does it feel for Friel to be right and for you to be wrong?" He didn't accept that. He responded and said, "Give it time. It's going to. Because it's cyclical." He likens it unto the emergent movement. The emergent movement, if you came with guys like Brian McLaren, Doug Padgett, it was all the rage. And it's unfortunately its seeds have scattered into evangelicalism, so it hasn't like gone away. It's just kind of dispersed, which isn't really great, frankly, by the way. And I think the same thing will happen with the seeds of Christian nationalism. Phil, in his presentation, he was sharing some quotes from some of these websites that are very popular. They are they claim to be Christian. They are as anti-Semitic as you can even imagine. He was sharing quotes I hadn't heard that were tweets and out there on social media from these podcasts that boast 100,000 listeners per episode. Who is listening to that? And then, okay, this is my paraphrase, but they're basically saying something along the lines of, Jews basically need to be a memory. What? Adolf Hitler was a Christian prince. What? Black people aren't fully human. What? I thought we kind of worked through this before. It's shocking the way that people are talking out there, which, by the way, I happen to have, this is great, Breakpoint, with not Chuck Colson, this was John Stone Street. He came up with some reasons anti-Semitism is back. This might be instructive for us. Hold on. Got to grab my glasses. According to a new report from Jay-Z. He's a rapper fellow. Jay-Z, I was asking Mrs. Friel, is Beyonce still a thing? I think maybe. They come and they go. Anyway, it was a task force against anti-Semitism. In both the number of lethal attacks and the number of casualties, 2025 was the deadliest year for anti-Semitic attacks. And the reason that John Stonestreet points this out is, number one, we've forgotten history. Now that almost everybody is dead from the Holocaust and World War II, there's no living memory of it, and people are rewriting history. Two, another factor is the quirk of the cultural moment in which skepticism is considered a virtue. Many are convinced they're too informed to be taken in by commonly held ideas, like the Holocaust. Yeah, that's what everybody thinks, but I'm not going to be tricked by that. I know the real story. I've been red-pilled, so I got the inside track on this. And it allows them to rewrite and reimagine history and override history. And so it is. Anti-Semitism is on the rise. And Christian nationalism, many in that camp, are joining that chorus of anti-Semitism. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute, a Nigerian journalist who spent more than 80 days in prison for reporting on the killing of Christians in his own country is a free man today, and he has a warning for all of us. He published a story back in 2021 quoting a Nigerian lawmaker who accused a government official of covering up attacks on Christian villages, and prosecutors charged him with spreading false information. That case dragged on nearly 5 years before a Nigerian court finally threw it out this past May, ruling that the evidence against him was manifestly unreliable. The Alliance Defending Freedom International helped to defend him, and he calls what is happening in his country genocide, with thousands of Christians killed every year by Islamic militants. He described walking onto the scene of an attack on a Christian wedding and helping bury more than 20 bodies in a mass grave. His message to Americans is that we should not take our freedom for granted. And we also shouldn't assume a minority intends to stay one. And our own immigration fight ran into a Texas courtroom recently where a federal judge denied Minnesota's emergency request to force Texas to hand over an ICE officer named Christian Castro. Castro was charged with firing his weapon through the front door of a Minneapolis home in January, wounding a Venezuelan man in the leg, and then telling investigators that the two men had come at him with a snow shovel and a broom handle. The video did not show that, and the charges against the two men were dropped. Texas has held Castro since May. The state's 90-day limit runs out this week, and Governor Greg Abbott has neither signed the extradition papers nor refused to. He sent the request to the Texas Secretary of State for review instead, so the judge ruled there is nothing yet for a court to decide. Accountability moved faster in West Virginia, however, where a 21-year-old man from Morgantown was arrested last week and charged with possessing child sexual abuse material. State police say 48 separate tips came in from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children before the arrest, and that he had been openly bragging about his collection on a chat app. He's being held on a $100,000 bond. And Meta has answered for quite a bit here recently. The parent company of Facebook and Instagram agreed this week to pay up $16.7 billion to settle claims that it engineered its apps to hook children and harvested kids' personal data illegally. Meta denies wrongdoing, which is what the company says while it's also still writing the check. It also agreed to real changes, including a two-hour daily limit for users under the age of 18 and no access at all beginning at midnight through 6 in the morning. So it took a federal trial and 51 attorneys general to establish that a 13-year-old should not be on Instagram at 3 in the morning. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. Both can be done at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Know your church fathers. Tertullian was a well-trained Greco-Roman philosopher. When he converted to Christianity, he used his great learning to vigorously defend Christianity. Tertullian rejected secular philosophy and is famously quoted as saying, "What hath Athens to do with Jerusalem?" This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Dadalant, dant, dant. Another one bites the dust. This is Wretched Radio. Go Googling for G3. You're not going to find it. Go to their website. It doesn't exist. Look for them on social media. All of their accounts have been canceled. Why? G3 experienced a second wave of what can only be considered a sub-ministry-like behavior. Not all of the details have been disclosed to all of us. I have not taken the time or energy to do inside sleuthing. I probably know about the same amount that you do regarding what happened at G3 that has now caused it to be out of business, shut down. This ministry was very impactful. This ministry was doing some very good things. Book publishing, conferences for pastors, not to mention the major G3 conference. I think the last one was at 7,000 people to something like a just massive conference. And it was a force for good coming out of that pulpit until it was discovered that the CEO, not sure that was his title, was besmirching. Yes, I said besmirching people on the internet by using pseudonyms instead of saying this is who I am and this is my critique. He used made-up accounts with made-up names to criticize not just charlatans and false teachers, no, to actually criticize people that spoke at his own conference, to criticize his own elders at the church where he pastored. It was breathtaking. It was really breathtaking. And I remember having a comparative feeling to what we're experiencing now with the latest saga of G3 Ministries. I remember at the time thinking, it's just so strange. Like, why didn't you just talk to those guys if you've got an axe to grind? What was your goal with brothers? I mean, men that you shared the platform with, men that you co-labored with at your own church. And I don't know that at the time I was using the word bizarre, but it was in the neighborhood. Well, now the latest breaking story from G3 that has caused it to go completely defunct, in my estimation, is much more bizarre, much more strange. Four elders from Praise Mill Baptist Church, two of whom I'm pretty certain were a part of G3 ministry, because G3 was actually at Praise Mill Baptist Church. They occupied some space there. They decided, for reasons unbeknownst to me, I'd love to know why they chose a pastor. And I'm not going to share this pastor's name because I believe he's been besmirched. I believe that he's been scandalized. And I think that that needs to be addressed, and we actually will. They decided to compile what they believed were accusations against him that involved plagiarism. They put this packet together. They shipped it to at least 30 different parties, people in the church, other elders at this pastor's church in Texas, and then to other ministries. And then the story broke that this pastor was being accused anonymously, but it also broke that the people behind these accusations were at G3 Ministries. And it was further discovered that these packets were put together with the return address of the pastor's church in Texas. That's duplicitous. They also then didn't sign it, and they would say that they wanted to remain anonymous because they didn't want to take any heat that would come from this pastor. So apparently they wanted others to take that heat. Tom Askell said it was the most Malakoy thing that he's seen in a long time. I'm not going to share with you what that Greek word means if you don't know. Google it. Tom, it killed me. Malakoy. It was very Malakoy of them to do that. And more than that, apparently they used latex gloves so that fingerprints wouldn't be left on the packets that they mailed while one of them was in Texas. The amount of energy and effort that went into this without a single one of them stopping to say, guys, is this really the right thing to be doing? Well, it was discovered they were behind it, and because of that, the intense pressure that I believe was received publicly from this has been one scandal too many for G3, and now they are defunct. They're gone. They're just gone. Disappear. All of that work just vanished. And I would like to address two, maybe more, but two issues from this current saga. Number one, let's talk about the reputation of the man that was scandalized in all of this. I don't want to mention his name He's a good brother. By the way, he used to serve on the board of G3. He resigned at the last scandal. Why? I don't know. What happened? I don't know. He's a godly man. He's been pastoring for 2-3 decades. Very large church. Great preacher. Faithful man. Delightful brother. He was the one who received these attacks. And these attacks, I think by all reasonable estimations, were wildly exaggerated. I believe what has happened is that the folks at G3, they took 17 of his sermons, they got the transcript, fed it into AI, and said, go find anything that looks like it could have come from a commentary. And it came up with some stuff ranging from, what was one of them that they said, this is clear evidence of plagiarism. It was something like a penny saved is a penny earned. And they found that also in AI found that in a commentary. So see, this man was plagiarizing. Really? He used a colloquialism. He used a slang, a statement that we use commonly, and that's plagiarism. One of them, he shared a joke, and he even said, the story is told. Okay, we all know what that means. He read or heard a joke someplace, and he shared it. Should he have given attribution for that? I didn't think that was a violation of an attribution rule. Now, was there one thing that he said where I thought, yeah, you should have probably given a little bit of an attribution for that? Would I put together a packet and send it out to 30 people accusing him of serial plagiarism? Hardly. Hardly. I suspect all of us have been guilty of that to some degree, because I'm certain this happens. That you read something, you just kind of tuck it away. You didn't put it into your sermon notes, but maybe it comes flying out of your mouth because, well, it's just in there. And in the pulpit, you're not even thinking about, like, oh, I read that on page 412 of this commentary that I use. It just happens. So I'm sure everybody has done something like that. Should he have perhaps tightened up a little bit of an attribution on one of the comments that he made? Yeah, yeah. What happened was, because this was done months ago before the story broke just recently, his church actually addressed it with him. And he said, okay, you know what? I see that. I'll tighten it up. The end. They dealt with it. But apparently that wasn't satisfactory, so G3 sent this packet out to even more people, so that it could become a public thing, which appears to only be for the purpose of besmirching this fellow. And I think it's worth stating, as best I can tell based on what I've seen, Gabe Hughes, who used to pastor with this man, did an excellent video on it. Go look up. Gabe Hughes is starting to crush it. I'm telling you, Gabe Hughes, dude, keep it up. I get to speak with Gabe in a few weeks at the White Harvest Conference in Foothills, Georgia. If you want to go Google that. Jimmy, do you know what the address is for that by any chance?
I do not. The website address?
Yeah.
It is whiteharvestmin.com.
Whiteharvestmin.com.
Yep.
Gabe is going to be there. He pastored with this fellow for 3 years. And he knows the guy. He said he's not a plagiarist by any means. And he shares the evidence for that. And so, if you happen to be listening from this fellow's church, do your best to put this behind you. You've got a good man in the pulpit. You do. All this has done has unnecessarily harmed some people, has harmed a man's reputation, has wobbled to a degree a local church. Now, I know they're going to recover. I know they already are. But I think that it needs to be said publicly, these accusations were unwarranted. Now, certainly to go public with them, certainly to label him a serial plagiarist, wildly inaccurate accusation, wildly inaccurate. And this man's reputation has been harmed, and it shouldn't have been. And the apology that was released, I wish it had stated that clearly. We were wrong in our accusations. Not just we shouldn't have done this way, but that we were just flat out wrong. I wish it had included that. But it didn't, so I want to say it. Those accusations were wrong. This should be a man whose reputation is pristine. This church should not have been dinged like this. So if you know who the man is, pray for him. If you know who the church is, pray for him. If you don't know who the man and the church are, pray for them. Because this is a good local church. And this should never have happened. But I do believe there's at least one more lesson. Next on Wretched Radio.
Here's something fun to know about Fortis Plus. It's not the same 12 videos on repeat. We're constantly adding new content. Our fellows are putting out hot takes on what everyone's talking about this week. We've got Gary Varvel drawing cultural cartoons that are funnier than your dad jokes. Not my dad jokes, but yours for sure. There's always something new on Fortis Plus. There's so much depth. Hundreds, maybe even thousands of hours of content is sitting there right now. Stuff on theology and marriage and parenting and manhood and cultural issues. Stuff you can dig into for months. And you can watch it all on your TV. On your Roku, your Fire TV, your Apple TV, your Android. Not just your phone, your actual TV. The Fortis Plus app, it's free. Download it. Throw it on your smart TV and see what Christ-centered content actually looks like. Fortis Plus. Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Let me tell you about something that we're all excited about. Fortis Plus, that's our app. It's absolutely free of charge. And when I say free, I mean actually free. No subscriptions, no paywalls, no bait and switch, nothing like that. And you'll find hundreds, maybe even thousands of hours of audio and video content on theology, family, biblical counseling. And look, it's not static content. No, we're adding content every single day. Content that's Christ-centered, and it's content that's at your fingertips for absolutely no charge. Now, how do we keep that free? Well, it's not magic. It's gospel partners. These are people, men and women just like you, who believe in what we're doing at Fortis Institute so much that they have decided to link arms with us. And if that's you, if you've benefited from anything we've done here at Fortis Institute, would you consider linking arms with us as well? All you have to do right now is just get your questions answered. And you can find those answers at fortisinstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel. History is full of kings, and every single one of those kings, well, they're gone now, except one. One king continues to reign, and Exalt the King with Todd Friel is a weekly podcast about that very king. Todd is the pastor of Alpharetta Bible Church, and every single week, he takes a passage of scripture and he preaches it the way it was meant to be preached, until you can see Jesus in all of his beauty and glory. And Todd will be the first to tell you, he's after more than just your attention. He preaches to stir your heart, because a king this glorious deserves to be loved, and a heart that loves him follows him gladly. So come and hear for yourself what happens when the Word of God lifts Christ up where he belongs. Exalt the King with Todd Friel. There's a new episode every week wherever you listen to podcasts or on fortisplus.org.
Attributes of God. What does it mean to say God is righteous? He is the standard of what is right and good. He is in strict adherence to his moral law, and he is the source of righteousness through Jesus Christ for every sinner who repents and puts their trust in Christ. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Not a definitive lesson. Yet, this is Wretched Radio. Earlier this week on Wretched, in recalling the G3, well, I guess we'll call it what it is, scandal that has just left such a mess, hurt a church, hurt so many people. G3 had a network of churches. I don't know how many hundreds were in that network. Well, they got to take that off of their website now. It's just a hassle. Maybe they were paying dues to be a part of it. I don't know. There were people that were buying their stuff. There were people that were supporting them financially, I'm sure. People that had spent money on tickets and airplane travel. Yikes. A lot of people were hurt in that. And Jimmy and I were noodling, what can we do in light of this recent scandal? What can local churches do to stave this type of thing off? And we came up with a big fat nothing burger. Well, we did. It's like, what do you do with some? And so Providentially was reading an article that was originally published in Church Answers. It was written by Sam Rayner. 5 safeguards your church needs before scandal strikes. Well, how providential is that? And I'm going to share 3 of the 5 that I thought were especially helpful. But simultaneously, let me share this, and you can certainly disagree with this, because this is why I don't think at this moment, at least in my mind, that this solution is definitive. What your church can do to make sure that nobody does anything boneheaded as an elder and brings scandal to the church and to the name of Jesus Christ. I don't think it's definitive yet, because as I was reading through this, and I'm going to share it because I think churches should indeed consider this, there was a part of me that started to go, because I was initially like, good. Some 5 things that a church can do to make sure that an elder doesn't go kaboom. But as I'm reading it and trying to learn from it and imagine what it would look like, even at our church, I started to get this sense of, really? Do we have to be doing this? I mean, really? Do we need to start putting ankle bracelets on pastors to track where they are all the time? I mean, this Rayner article doesn't go that far, but it's in that neighborhood. And I'm wondering, wow, because, okay, for instance, just consider G3. I know their theological training. I know where they went to SEM. They were ordained. There were other elders. Like, aren't those safeguards? They've got wives. Aren't those safeguards? Do we really need to be like tracking pastors to know where they're at all day so that they don't do something stupid? I just felt a little heavy-hearted about it. And so I'm going to share these because I think that every church should consider it. But simultaneously, I do think that we need to weigh these things and ask the question, should it be this way? I mean, just because we've got some of these breaking stories, do we want to like put these sorts of programs on our pastors? I think that's worth noodling and considering. Received an email from somebody who said, well, here's the problem with y'all, why you've got all of these scandals, which implied to me that he is not evangelical. When you say, you people are having your scandals, and it's like, well, hold the phone. And his encouragement was that there should be denominationalism. That'll stave it off. And I thought, no, it doesn't stave it off. In fact, I was just reading in the North American Anglican Church. I think that's what they go. It's the break-off Episcopalians in America. I was so thrilled about it because Anglicans, they are indeed Orthodox, at least on paper. And this was a group that when the Episcopalian denomination and the Anglican Communion, they're going progressively liberal, they said, we're out. And I think there's about 1,000 churches in that group. Awesome. All right, they're a denomination. They just had to discipline a guy who apparently wasn't behaving very pastorally and boot him. Okay, so it doesn't save it. Furthermore, let's just, if you will, consider the Roman Catholic Church. Can there be more hierarchy than the Roman Catholic Church? I mean, they probably outdo Presbyterians when it comes to our hierarchy. And yet, how many thousands of priests have been busy molesting boys? It doesn't stave it off. So even Presbyterians, they have Presbyterians. I truly admire the levels of government that they have there, but they have stuff going on. They got rogues in there. Nobody's immune from this thing. So as I share this, I'm just simultaneously wondering, we want to be careful we don't overreact. I think that's the word. We don't want to overreact in this moment. And yet I do think that we still need to wrestle with it. I'm not settled on this yet. I don't know what should be done. And you, every church will have to decide that from themselves. What will we do at Alpharetta Bible Church? The answer is, I don't know. Because this is new for us to this degree and to this extreme. Here are the 3 points that I thought were worthwhile. He writes, first of all, a preamble. There are warning signs churches should never ignore. When accountability is external but limited. When leaders avoid accountability. When secrecy becomes the culture. The ground is already shifting beneath the ministry. Add in secret governing documents, vague public statements, double standards for top leaders, internal investigations of wrongdoing, and multiple accusations from multiple sources, and the pattern becomes difficult to dismiss. So if you see smoke, you do need to pursue it respectfully. And if you do see double standards, you need to be... The congregation isn't a footstool for the pastor. This is precisely where the congregation comes in to say, hey, brother, pastor, we're seeing some things. Can we talk about this? I don't think they just have that ability. I think that they have that responsibility, and they even have that charge to do that. Now, does that mean preemptive? Well, here are the suggestions that he gave. Church leaders must proactively seek accountability. Set clear standards for every staff member and ministry leader. Put those standards in writing in an employee handbook or personnel manual. Establish practical protections on devices. Make sure every key leader has both internal accountability and an external mentor or trusted friend who can speak honestly into his life. All right, here's two that I think that we should focus on that might help us have clarity. Do we have to do this? Should we do this? The two were that every pastor should have somebody to whom they're accountable. Would any of us disagree with that? I don't think, Jimmy, would you disagree with that?
No, absolutely not.
Primarily, and you don't want to make the wife the police, but in the marriage, you were accountable to one another, right? But what about, it said practical protections on devices. Now, I don't know exactly what Sam Rainer meant. So what does that mean? I don't know. And then and that's where I started to go, wow. My wife, my kids, they can get into my cell phone anytime. Do I want like everybody at church to have that? Well, I guess I don't really want that. Just feels like no, that's not right or necessary. I'll let my wife, let my kids. They can take it anytime they want to and go looking anywhere that they want to. Do I want to have that for, do I want to give that to Jimmy?
Yes.
How would you feel about that?
I'm probably the wrong one to ask that question. I rarely use my phone. I don't like it. And it doesn't matter to me.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's got things in there, no, medical information.
Right. No, I understand that. Yeah, I get that.
It's like, okay, we'll continue. It's up to your church to sort it. Publish expectations for top leaders where church members can see them. Churches need visible, clear standards for pastors and key leaders. When expectations are public, the church understands what integrity looks like, and leaders understand and trust that trust is earned in that light. I think that's fine. That's good. Right? But isn't that already spelled out for us in 1 Timothy 2 and 3 and Titus 1?
I don't know how to flesh this out, but I was thinking about our conversation earlier this week, and I know we talked about that the plurality of elders should already take care of this. You know, elders are...
But it didn't at Praise Mill.
Well, no, I know. But what I'm saying is that maybe there's a way, because I fully believe we don't do this in the church as a whole, but when elders are... made elders, you know, they're tested and they meet the qualifications. They need to continue meeting those qualifications after.
Well, you know what? Congratulations. That's the next point. Hold regular reviews with all employees, including the lead pastor. Mid-year check-ins, end-of-year reviews should be standard. Now, let's be honest. The guy can lie. Okay, we know. So I think we should seek to do things. I think that there needs to be limits to some of these things, perhaps. It's up to each church to do that. And I think there also needs to be a recognition. A guy can always lie and deceive. You know, there's ways of getting around cell phone or the computer and, you know, hiding stuff. And you can always, hey, have you been looking at any dirty images? No. I mean, how do you know? So I think that ultimately there are going to be limits to what a church can do. I'm not sure that there's anything that is waterproof in this, but I do believe here's where we're at in the moral to this story. It's something we need to continue exploring. This is worthy of our efforts. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.